CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Unbranded, the show where we explore the link between human and brand behavior, how the brain impacts individuals and corporates' performance, as well as how brands impact people and cultures. I am Timothy Maurice, and today we focus our attention on the leader's brain. And when I say leader, I don't necessarily mean a president or CEO, although I am including them. However, I do mean anyone attempting to usher a group of people from A to B for a collective goal, whether this is the leader in a home or you're an entrepreneur trying to lead your efforts around funding challenges, or a teacher trying to lead young people towards an elevated state of excellence. This show about the leader's brain, you're going to gain value out of this show. And, you know, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to Unbranded. And Unbranded is exactly how it sounds. UN Branded. And you can go to iTunes and subscribe. And we have listeners from all over the world, from South Korea to Japan to India, New Delhi. I've got listeners that emailed me recently from New Delhi. I'm so grateful. And now Saudi Arabia. And we have listeners literally from all over the world, of course, throughout Americas and in the UK. So we're really grateful for our global audience. And I'm thrilled today to be able to bring you today's show about Unbranded. So do subscribe. And thanks for everyone who have been subscribing from day one. I really, really appreciate you. A major component of your ability to excel as a leader is your ability to optimize your brain power. And there is no one I would rather have this discussion with than our resident neuroscientist, Dr. Tara Swart, award-winning author of Neuroscience for Leadership, medical doctor, and senior lecturer at MIT Sloan. Welcome back to Unbranded.
Thanks, Timothy. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yes, I'm super excited to have this conversation. I think it's just sort of a follow-up and, you know, a move in our ability to continue to build on the conversations we've had before. And I want everyone listening to pick up on the threads, and you'll hear Dr. Swart really emphasize some of the things that she may have shared before, but it's so important that I want you to make sure that you get them. So you're going to come back to Johannesburg on the 25th of May for one day only, like Michael Jackson is coming to town, one day only, one shot, hosted by the Business Results Group to talk about the leader's brain. How much do you miss us here in Johannesburg?
If I came to South Africa four times a year, it still wouldn't be enough. And I have been lucky enough to come four times a year in the past, and Business Results Group have sponsored my work for many years now, way before neuroscience was a sexy topic, way before even you knew who I was.
Yes.
So May will be my first time in South Africa for this year. And we're doing a whole day. And apparently we've had a lot of interest from people that have attended my workshops before. So like you said, there always has to be some of the basic neuroscience, but research is progressing at such a massive rate that there's always some new things to add. So that's what we should be hearing today.
Awesome.
And on the 25th.
Awesome. Your fundamental goal is to get the best out of individuals, teams, and leaders' brains. Is this ever difficult? Do you ever come across a stubborn brain like mine where you just go, you know what, we may need to add something else? I mean, is it ever really difficult when you get frustrated, or is it just really fun and rewarding for you?
Well, it's absolutely at the end of the spectrum of being fun and rewarding. And, you know, you can always make a difference. I always say we can always be better. And, you know, with my own brain, I know that it's like going to the gym. If I go to the gym by myself, I'm not going to push myself as hard as if I go with the personal trainer. So it's good to have, you know, accountability from someone else or technology, or just get the latest information to know what more you could be doing. I have to say, everything from the psychiatric patients I had when I was a doctor all the way up to the executives I coach now, I have never met someone and thought, there's nothing I can do to help you. There Wow. have been times of frustration. In a 6-session coaching program, sometimes I get to session 5 and I think, I'm not sure this person has got what they need to make a real transformation. And then I always trust in the process. And the couple of times that that's happened, I've come back to session 6 and they've had that massive insight. So a lot of work goes on in the background. You know, there's sometimes you feel tired and you don't know why, but it's actually because there's a lot of psychological work going on as you create these new brain pathways. So given what we know now about neuroplasticity, there's really no reason to believe that everyone can't change their brain for the better.
So everyone who walks through this door with an open mind on the 25th of May will definitely take something away, am I right?
Absolutely.
So before we dive into this conversation, neuroscience is one of those science words that seems really complex. From a neuroscientist herself, how do you define neuroscience?
Well, I define it as the study of the brain and spinal cord. That's the central nervous system, but also about the brain-body connection, which is all the nerves in the body, which we call the peripheral nervous system. So it's essentially the study of your brain, your spinal cord, and all your nerves. And actually, I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the things I'm really passionate about is demystifying and simplifying neuroscience. It's way too easy to use these long words and try to make it overcomplicated, but actually, the real art is to make something complicated easy to understand. And that's why the workshop, like the one in May in Joburg, is so popular, because people go away with something they can start doing differently from that day and the next day at work. And then also some more complex concepts to take away and think about over the longer term.
One of your quotes is, most people get paid to use their brains, but don't fully understand how the brain works or how to optimize its performance. For the naysayers out there, for those who just really go, you know what, this is what I have and I'm going to work with it. What advantage can be gained when a leader truly understands how the brain functions?
I think that when you're tired, when you're stressed, when there's a big crisis in the workplace, that's when you really need to get the best out of your brain. And many people can go day to day and carry out their entire career just with what they've got. But why wouldn't you want to do more? Why wouldn't you want to get more out of what you've got? Not just for yourself, but for the impact that it can have on so many other people.
I got it. The difference between a brain of a leader that thrives at the absolute highest level and a non-leader. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, the matrix of a brain is just going to be fundamentally different in terms of the inputs and so forth. But, you know, just a couple of things that, you know, if we were to sort of like talk about someone who's really thriving at their highest, most optimal level versus someone who's not really considering their brain power and the options within that they have within themselves, what would be some of the major differences?
Okay, so I think you've actually asked about two different things there. So one is the brain of a leader different to the brain of someone that's not, you know, maybe perceived as a leader? And then what's the difference between someone who's absolutely doing everything to get the most out of their brain versus somebody who it doesn't know what they should be doing or is just, you know, not doing things that they know they should be doing? So in terms of leadership brains, I think that this is a quote in my book as well, which is that leaders are born and then made. So, you know, you already said you might not be a CEO or a president, but you might be, you know, leading your family, leading a small team. I believe that at the very least, you lead your own life. You choose what you eat. You choose which job you do. You choose who you're friends with. And all of that is also about leadership. So I don't really believe that there is such a thing as a leader's brain. I think that anyone who wants to become a leader, there are things that they could do to make that happen.
Okay.
There are some scientific studies that show some differences between the brains of traditional CEOs and entrepreneur brains. And you already mentioned entrepreneurship. And actually, one of my clients in South Africa said, our biggest problem isn't unemployment, it's un-entrepreneurship. And I think there's so much potential in South Africa with the brains of children are just so untapped and could be improved much more than by the time you get to our age, Timothy. But also that what you're saying, the most important part of what you're saying is about what can you do to get the most out of your brain. And that's where the differences are. The inputs are things like rest, fuel, hydrate, oxygenate, and simplify. Now, we have talked about these things before, but I'd really like to ask the listeners, are you doing all the things that we talked about before? Are you sleeping 7 to 9 hours a night? Are you eating brain-friendly foods and making sure you eat regularly or at least before a really important meeting? Are you drinking half a liter of water per 15 kilos of your body weight per day? it's almost like you wouldn't expect to get in your car without putting petrol in and checking the oil and the water, but we're doing that with our brains. You know, are you in a sedentary job, or could you find a way of doing walking and talking meetings?
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, we're bombarded with information which our brain doesn't really like. So are you doing everything that you possibly can to simplify things to your brain when it comes to making really important decisions?
One of the things, I attended your course at MIT, your neuroscience for leadership course, and the diet that was designed to get the most out of your brain for this course, I really believe impacted my retention. What's interesting is that I don't typically remember, I think it's my short-term or, I don't know, long-term memory, but I really often struggle with sort of remembering things. I think it's short-term. And for some reason, maybe I was just really passionate about it, but I do think the diet had a lot to do with the fact that I retain, I feel like 80% more of the things that in that particular sort of short-term memory cycle. Could diet play an important role in this sort of memory dynamic?
Diet plays a huge role. So as you said, when I teach a two-day program, I make sure that the catering is brain-friendly. And we'll be doing the same on the 25th of May. We'll be supplying foods that are more likely to keep your energy and resilience going for a whole day. So the major reason that you'd have had more access to your short-term memory is that you weren't eating foods that make you feel sluggish and tired, because they weren't that high in carbohydrate, and they were higher in the good fats that your brain loves. And they were hydrating foods, which also means that your brain gets the water. Your brain is mostly made up of fat and water. So you were feeding it with what it's made of, rather than feeding it with things that it has to divert its energy to. Your body diverts its energy to digesting that food to release the glucose that your brain uses.
Versus paying attention.
You just have so much more energy to use your memory and your concentration and your focus. So we all have the ability to remember things, to learn things. But if you're busy digesting food that is, you know, not, it's toxic to your system, or at least not, you know, very easy to digest, then you're taking blood flow away from your brain whilst you do that.
Got it. And for me, you know, I've noticed that before I go and do talks, before I go into sort of power meetings, you know, it's not easy to have this sort of brain friendly food. You have to plan it and make sure you go to, and shop properly and more strategically and so forth. But I'm finding a big, big payoff. So, thank you for that. And when it comes to South Africa is experiencing almost a social political trauma at the moment. There's been a downgrade to what we call, what's considered the credit rating agencies call junk status. And, you know, there's been a lot of political shuffling and so forth. And, you know, people are experiencing extraordinary stress. I mean, there's a leadership disruption happening globally. I mean, impeachment in Brazil, South Korea's president was impeached, you know, so it's not a uniquely South African thing. Well, this global leadership disruptive chapter in history that we're in, and obviously America and Trumpism and so forth, there's a lot of stress on leaders. What is the impact of stress on efficiency and leadership?
Well, it's absolutely massive, Timothy. So we've just been talking about, you know, diet, what's the impact on your brain. It's pretty big, and it's something you can do something about. Stress is a whole other story. I mean, at the very worst, stress correlates with the hormone cortisol, which is actually toxic to brain cells. It can kill brain cells. So, you know, sort of going through chronic stress and not really doing some of the things to help yourself to recover from that can be damaging long term, not just during the stress. So let's go back a bit. So you're a leader who's under stress. That means that the blood flow in your brain is kept down to the areas where you need just for the activities to survive. And this for a leader could mean that, yes, you get up in the morning, you go to the office, you do the minimum that you have to do to keep your job and keep people happy, but you can't collaborate. You don't have the extra brain resources for collaboration. You start to feel paranoid and like you can't trust people because the blood flow is simply not going to to the higher parts of the brain that do things like trust, creativity, solving complex problems, thinking outside of the box, exactly the things that you need to be doing when you're in this kind of stressful situation. Unfortunately, your brain will go into what I call low power mode. So turning that around whilst you're in the stressful situation is really difficult. It's possible if you've kept your brain in the best possible condition that you could have up until that point. But it's always better to try to be proactive about stress. And that's why I keep talking about, you know, the basic fundamentals like sleeping enough, doing exercise that oxygenates your brain, having some stress management techniques in your toolkit, like some mindfulness, some yoga, time with, you know, people that are meaningful to you, positive relationships, maybe doing something like journaling or speaking to a coach or a therapist. These things keep your resilience topped up so that if there is a crisis, you've got more resources to call on.
As people, you know, what's interesting for me is that, you know, a big part of this is being extremely proactive and not waiting to sort of try to solve an issue, solve your brain issue after something has already happened. Is a leader, you know, is thinking and creating sort of a vision for their own personal life. So incorporating their sort of, you know, using this sort of neuroscience principles to incorporate into their life. So when they deal with a reshuffling or political trauma, they're able to handle it. Would you agree with this?
Yeah, there's even a section in my book on what's called stress inoculation, which says that if you purposely put yourself through small situations of stress and then you manage your recovery afterwards, that gives your brain a message that you can go through stress and you can come out of it, you can deal with it. So examples of this are the Nordic practice of plunging yourself into icy cold water, followed by recovering in a sauna. So, I mean, if you're not in Joburg, if you're in Cape Town, you could certainly do this in the ocean. So putting your body through thermal stress and then you managing your recovery afterwards over time gives your brain the message that I can control my recovery from a stress. Another way of doing it is by intermittent fasting. So I know I've said you need to eat regularly, you need to eat brain boosting foods. But when you're not stressed, one thing you can do is actually reduce the calories that you take to about a quarter of what you would normally eat on two non-consecutive days of the week. And then always eat normally the day after. That also tells your body, like, even if I think I'm starving, I can make sure that I eat normally the next day. And people will find other forms of stress inoculation that they can do.
Wow. Neuroplasticity has been sort of, you know, it's been an exciting phenomenon because, you know, the idea that you can't teach an old dog new tricks have been turned upside down. And the fact that the brain can sort of reorganize itself, that has an extraordinary impact on how leaders should see their learning environment. So if you're a leader at an organization, your people have the capacity to evolve and change and create more brain power. How serious should leaders be taking this idea that the people they work with, who they think can't change, can physically change?
Yeah, so very seriously. And there's 3 points I want to make here. One is that if you think about it as physically creating a new pathway in the brain, it can be easier to manage than feelings like, oh, this person needs to change, or there's, you know, it's about behavior and feelings. That can feel a bit intangible. But if you think this person needs to create one new pathway in their brain and you can help them to do that, that's an easier place to start from. There's a lovely book called The Art of Possibility, which was written by two music teachers. And one of the things they say is that at the beginning of the semester, we give everyone an A grade, and then it's up to them whether they keep it or lose it.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes when, you know, let's say there's a merger or an acquisition, or you take over a team where you didn't pick everyone that was in the team, it's easy to say, well, you know, I know that the people I trust and I've worked with before, they should get an A grade, but these other people, you know, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt till they prove themselves. Why don't you try and do it the other way around? Why don't you give them an A grade? And then if they let you down, then you can think differently about them. But choose to trust people rather than start from mistrust. That's what the leader can do. And then how the leader can help the person to change is, it's actually quite difficult in the brain to unlearn a pathway that's already established. A better tactic is to overwrite that pathway with a new desired behavior.
Mm.
And so if you say, like, let's say I said to you, Timothy, you know, I don't like the way that you ask me questions. That would leave you very, you know, in a state of ambiguity about, well, what should I do differently? What should I ask her instead? If I said to you, Timothy, I prefer you to send me the questions in advance, or I prefer you to ask me questions in this order, then you'd know what you should do, and you could choose to do that instead.
Absolutely. Wow. That makes so much sense. So overriding, or sort of creating new sort of pathways, almost to help sort of dissolve or just sort of create more dominant space in the brain for the behavior you want.
Yeah, just think of it like, it's easier to walk along a solid road than a sort of rickety rope bridge.
Got it. Makes complete sense. So on the 25th of May, you're going to be in Johannesburg, one day only, hosted by the Business Results Group. And you're going to be sharing and really, really unpacking this in a full day. Like, what time does it start in the morning?
Well, you can arrive early for a brain-boosting breakfast, but I'll kick off about 8:30, 9 o'clock with a bit of an introduction. And then I like to intersperse content with some self-awareness exercises, a bit of interaction with the other people in the group. I love getting questions. I'll show video clips. There'll be, you know, both writing and pictures on the slides. So in terms of accessing the brain through the five senses, I really try to change the tone and the pace and the visuals during the day to keep people occupied. So there's going to be a lot of variety. I don't want to give too much away, but there will be plenty of content. It's been a couple of years since I last did a workshop like this with the Business Results Group. So there's new ways of looking at things. There's new research. But I will also be reiterating the basics and you know, helping people to maybe make one or two more tweaks if they've already made some changes to try to improve their brains since the last time.
I have to say that I have experienced fundamental shifts, and I've experienced, you know, greater sort of awareness and my ability to be able to, you know, becoming more tactile and ability to handle things, particularly, you know, as an entrepreneur, someone who works for themselves, dealing with a lot of complexity. So, you know, I see these conversations as a big part of my own work and sharing it and extending your work. So I want to thank you for your commitment to this field and your discipline. My last question to you is, are there any leaders out there that you've observed who, or maybe you've worked with, who may be fairly well known, or even if they're not well known, that you think really does sort of live this sort of optimal brain power philosophy?
Mm-hmm. So there are actually some high-profile people that demonstrate what I would call neuroscience-based behaviors. So a really easy one to mention, I haven't worked with him, just for the record, is Mark Zuckerberg. So he famously wears the same clothes every day. That is a form of bringing simplicity into your life. It's a form of what we call choice reduction. So when you wake up in the morning, let's say you've had 8 hours of good quality sleep, you have like, it's like a glass of water. Every time you make a decision, you sip from that glass. If you're stressed, then there's a crack in that glass and it's slowly leaking out even when you're not particularly making decisions. So anything that you can do to bring more routine into your life, to reduce the number of choices and decisions that you have to make, keeps that glass topped up for longer and for, you know, ready for the bigger and more important decisions that you may have in the day. An extension of this, which I believe Barack Obama used or probably still uses, is that to have a morning routine, like same gym routine at the same time every day after waking up at the same time every day, and then same breakfast at the same time. He didn't necessarily wear the same clothes every day, but he had a narrow repertoire of clothing to choose from. So keeping a simple morning routine, like, you know, especially if you're a working parent, you don't want to wake up and think, what should I wear? What should the children wear? What should we all have for breakfast? What's going to be in the packed lunch? You want to have thought about that the night before. so that by the time you get to work, you've got a lot of brain power left.
Wow. So even having sort of, you know, a home well-designed, very sort of clean, where things are, you know where things are. I mean, I remember when I was younger, it sounds like to me that, you know, having things all over the place really sort of helped reduce my capacity to handle that day.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like, you know, if my desk or my bedroom is in a mess, I just feel like my mind is cluttered and I can't work properly. So I sometimes tackle that first as a way of resetting. And then I'll create a new mind map for what I need to do for the next week.
Awesome.
Another sort of major thing that we've kind of touched on already, though, is that leaders think quite a lot about how they present themselves to the world. So they may be making choices about eating and exercising to look healthy and role model, you know, sort of holistic well-being and resilience. But how many of us are thinking, what should I eat and who should I spend time with? And what kind of, you know, switching off activities do I have that make me the best leader, that help me to make the best decisions? So it's really just about being mindful about the inputs that your body is receiving, everything from food to what you see and what you smell, and realizing that all of those things connect to your leadership.
Awesome. That is Dr. Tara Swart, author of Neuroscience for Leadership, a lecturer at MIT, and a former medical doctor who will be in Johannesburg on the 25th of May for one day only. And you can go to a number of websites, but does your website have the details? I'd like to promote your website.
My website doesn't have the details of this event, but, you know, I have two websites now, taraswart.com and The Unlimited Mind. But if you go to www.brg.co.za, then that's where the event details are.
Okay. www.brg.co.za. You'll find the details. I'm going to be there, so I'm really looking forward to seeing you, Tara, and also looking forward to seeing the listeners. And let's continue to dialogue and really spread this conversation around the potential and the value of neuroscience to impact the brain and leaders' performance. Thank you so much, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Unbranded. CliffCentral.com.